Ezek a mécsések nem közel vannak a festményekhez. Okay, you have to forgive me. So I'll continue on with the Bhagavatam overview in a little ad-lib way. Okay. I first got Bhagavatam in 1971. At that time, Bhagavatam was not in a book form. They were little soft cover pamphlets, which had maybe a couple of chapters in it. And I was in Montreal. I lived in Montreal. My family emigrated from here to Montreal in 1956. And from 1966 till 1971. I was going to McGill, and McGill University is downtown Montreal, and the temple was situated on what's called Park Street, which is downtown Park Avenue. Excuse me, Park Street, Park Avenue and Pines. And it was above Pines Pizza. So Pines Pizza was close to the university. So I used to go to Pines Pizza. There was always this noise going on upstairs. At first I didn't know what it was all about. I later found out through the Hare Krishnas up there. And they used to come on campus and chant, because it was very close to the temple. Srila Prabhupada lived there because I was a student, so in the summer I would always work. So every during the fall, when I was having a new apartment from fall to spring, I was married at that time. My wife worked and I went to school. She paid the bills. I just hung around at the university. And Bhagavatam was, as I mentioned, because devotees were so much around, not only devotees, but actually Srila Prabhupada was also lived there. He lived on Prince Arthur Street. Prince Arthur is about six streets over from McGill, and it's about four blocks long. And I lived on the south end of it, and he lived on the north end of it. I never met him. Prabhupada used to just go out and walk. I didn't know. And the book that I still remember, and they used to come out in a series, and we'd sort of get them. In the beginning, I used to just go occasionally to the temple. Then I would go every Sunday for the Sunday feast. We would go. And whatever books there were, then we would get them. Although interestingly, one of the first times I went to the temple was to buy a Bhagavad Gita. But the Hare Krishna temple didn't have Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. So I said, sorry, we don't have it. I thought it was quite strange that the Hare Krishnas didn't have a Bhagavad Gita. So I went to the university bookstore that was on Sherbrooke Street. But they had 20 different Bhagavad Gitas. Somehow or another, the Bhagavad Gita I picked up, I only realized it later, it was Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita, that was the one I took home. But there were 20 different versions, editions of the Bhagavad Gita. And the Bhagavatam, I still remember, is that picture still there. It's Lord Varaha, reddish Lord Varaha. There are different, interestingly, we are in the Sweta Varaha, which means white. We're in the Sweta Varaha millennium. And this red Varaha, this happened at another time, another creation. But Lord Varaha fighting with Hiranyaksha on Garbhodak Ocean with the earth planet floating on the water. And it was, you know, it was at the scope of something that we never had. And interestingly, that at that time in Los Angeles, there was actually devotees were producing for some hippie radio station in America, they were producing Krishna book tapes. And they also did this, it's available, it must be available somewhere. They also did this narrations, they did narrations from the Bhagavatam. One was the Daksha Yagya. I mean, that was a really gory thing to put on. The other one was, and it occurred to me also as I was looking about, you know, this concept of God, all he's doing is killing people. Either he's killing them in Vrindavan or he's killing him in different incarnations. Like really violent religion. And of course we were pacifists at the time, we weren't so much into violence. But still, the fact that he ate butter, that really won me over, because I liked eating butter just on its own. I still do, but I can't afford to do it anymore, health-wise. Even though we got so many cows that make fantastic butter. And finally the Bhagavatams came out. There was one devotee who would always preach to me in the temple. His name is Gokulananda. He's still there. He's still there in Montreal temple. I often meet him in Mayapur. And interestingly, he's got a pacemaker in his heart now. And he was very gregarious. He was French-Canadian, but he spoke, even at that time, fluent English. And when we came to the temple, he would preach to us. And I remember once being in this restaurant, vegetarian restaurant, not far from a campus, and he walked in. And I think he was selling incense and books to them. And he walked in, and he said, look at the other end, and he saw me, and he would just wave to me. He said, Peter, and he came over, and he said, you won't believe it, we've got first five volumes of Srimad Bhagavatam. What's your address? I'll bring it to you. I was so keen on giving him my address. But anyway, I couldn't say no. So he brought them over, five volumes. And first canto was three volumes, six volumes. Second canto was two volumes and six volumes. And even today, when I moved in the temple in 73, those were the books that were available. And at that time, I decided I was going to sort of retire from the world. I was 23, it was time to retire. And so I moved up into the Laurentians. And this was in December. It was me, my wife, and my dog. And we rented this huge, big house, about a 10-bedroom house. It's in the wintertime, no one stays up there. So we got snowed in. In Laurentians, when you get snowed in, you get snowed in. That's like 3 meters of snow, you know, it goes above the windows. That's how you get snowed in. Snow here is, no one would even bother with this. It was great. In Montreal sometimes, when it would snow, it would snow like 2 meters of snow overnight, and the whole city would like come to a standstill. It was ideal for missing school. School was canceled. The only thing is they had such an efficient system that by the afternoon they clean everything up. But phenomenal. So we're there up in the middle of nowhere in the Laurentians, snowed in, and I was chanting 16 rounds. Actually, I wasn't chanting 16 rounds, I was chanting 32 rounds. Because I thought a round was, you go here, and obviously you have to come back. And I couldn't figure out how the bodies were chanting so quickly, and I was chanting so slow. And so I was just chanting my 16 rounds a day, and I was studying Srimad Bhagavatam 5, 6, 7 hours a day. I would just sit and read while my wife was cooking, and I would just read Bhagavatam to her. And so my first and it opened first canto. First canto is really about, but we went over that. It lays out the introduction to the Bhagavatam. It lays out sort of the basic theology, what are the questions that the Bhagavatam answers. And for me, this was like, I'm sure you all have that experience, that when you come in contact with transcendental knowledge, all of a sudden all these lights start coming on. The first one was that I was going to die. That was, I am going to die, despite the fact that I happen to be 23 years old, I'm going to die. And it could be any time. Sometime Prabhupada mentioned that Pariksit Maharaj was 24 years old, and he was already the emperor, and he was going to die. So what do you do if I'm going to die tomorrow, then what would I do? And I realized, well, I really take spiritual life very seriously. And the first verse that I memorized in Sanskrit, Ayurharativai Punksam Tasyamasya Chayanado. Shukadeva Goswami says, both by rising and setting, the sun decreases the duration of life of all those. The sun's coming up. Well, we see what a beautiful sunset, what a beautiful sunrise. But actually, this is like a hourglass, and it's bringing me closer and closer to death. I better get serious about things. So when I moved into the temple, and then I figured I should leave everything behind. Pariksit Maharaj left everything behind, so I just left. I brought my car, and I donated the car to the temple. And I split whatever possessions I had, 50-50, half went to the temple, half went, I gave to my wife. And temple president said, where did you hear that? I said, Prabhupada says you're supposed to give 50 to your family, and 50 you give to Brahmins. he was lamenting about the other 50% that I gave to my life, but he could not argue with what Prabhupada said. And came in one afternoon, next day, after morning program, I sat down to study the books, and they said, "What are you doing?" I said, "I'm reading Srimad Bhagavatam." He said, "We don't do that here." So I said, "You don't? It's the Hare Krishna temple. Don't you read Srimad Bhagavatam?" He said, "No, we go out and we sell the books. We don't read them." I said, "You just have Bhagavatam class. You don't need to read it." So that was like the sort of the first challenge, and it was one of the liberties that I took when I finally became temple president, was that I was able to budget my own time and make time to start reading Srimad Bhagavatam again. And there was a certain period in ISKCON's history, and that was between 1973, then the books started to come. Srimad Bhagavatam, and in 1975 was Chaitanya Charitamrita. So we had this phenomenon that these boxes of books would arrive, like almost on a monthly basis, 3-2, 3-3, 4-1, 4-2. Of course, Hungarian is different than English, and it's even different than the present publication. 5-1, 5-2, 6-1, 2-3, 7-1, 2-3, 8-1, 2. I think also 3, not the same thing for ninth canto. And Chaitanya Charitamrita was coming 1 or 2 volumes a month were being printed. We could read fast enough. And these books were coming and coming, and of course we're just being built for them. Temples were just built for the books, and like them or not, they come. And of course we're also distributing Srimad Bhagavatam, and we're distributing some of these books that were sometimes the really extraordinary things, or I would say outrageous things. But particularly Prabhupada had us concentrate. He said 1-1, 2-1, 6-1. These were the books for mass distribution of Srimad Bhagavatam. And at that time, every book, Bhagavatam, print about usually 20,000 volumes. That was the first run, and that would go out. And then the books which were to sell a lot, like these 1-1, 2-1, 6-1, because 6-1 is all about ajangam, chanting the holy name. 1-1 is the introduction. 2-1 is Shukadeva Goswami's appearance and introduction. So then these would be the books we would distribute en masse. And Prabhupada complained. He says, "Don't you read the books? Don't you read my books?" And it was a fact that there's a certain dynamic at that time just between this treasure trove of transcendental knowledge. And we would sort of read them, and we would mention them to each other. "Did you read this? Did you read that?" And especially when Chaitanya Charitamrita came. But we wouldn't really study or get deeply into it. The mood during Srila Prabhupada's time of Krishna consciousness was of spreading Krishna consciousness, and especially giving and distributing Srimad Bhagavatam to others. And the experience of doing that was such a rewarding one that in one sense it sort of balanced off not actually knowing what we were distributing. So in many cases we were selling books that we hadn't even read. But as time went on, it became very obvious that if you don't read these books, then you don't become steady in Krishna consciousness. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Anavigyaninam sadrisham pavitram yamidyate. There's nothing like this transcendental knowledge. And one who's situated in transcendental knowledge, so Gyani, Krishna says, five or four types of people come to him. Artha, jignasur, artha, te gyanischa, te shudyani mitya yuktam yeko bhakti visishyate. But this person is visishyate, he's the best. Why? Fiyo hi gyani to tyaktam. Because someone who has knowledge, then he will actually develop attachment to Krishna. Bahavo gyana tavasa, putrama bhava magata. By knowledge of me, people have developed love for me. And although we had a very strong sentiment, and sometimes that sentiment was more towards Srila Prabhupada than it was actually towards being Krishna conscious, it was just Srila Prabhupada was sort of such a special, extraordinary person that the devotees were giving themselves to him. And Krishna and Krishna consciousness was in one sense sort of secondary. We were a cult. We were a personality cult. Prabhupada didn't want us to be a personality cult. He wanted us to be a Krishna consciousness movement. But Prabhupada's personality was so powerful that more or less, wherever you were in the world, but the fact that Prabhupada was walking on the planet somewhere had an effect on you. And although we weren't living in the digital age, we weren't even really living in the communication age, telex came a little later, telegram was there, telephone was like, you know, there's no such thing as a mobile phone at that time. But still we were getting newsletters, Srila Prabhupada's activities, and what books Srila Prabhupada working on and translating. 10th canto part 1, 10th canto part 2, and Prabhupada came to chapter 14 and he stopped. That's as far as he got. Although Prabhupada had already given the 10th canto in Krishna book to us, and probably in the next 5 minutes that we have, I just concentrate on that, that how interesting it was that Srila Prabhupada had a lot of health challenges. He came on a boat, he had 2 heart attacks. A year later he had another heart attack. He came to India to recuperate. He came back, he had constant migraines, intense headache. Certain point, Srila Prabhupada also said, now, what do I do if I'm about to die? And when Srila Prabhupada had his heart attack, and that was then in San Francisco, then Prabhupada said that it was his time was up, and it was time to go. And that Krishna had actually told him, it's all right, come back. Prabhupada said, but I told Krishna that my work's not finished. He says, these students are so young, they're really not really prepared, and I haven't finished writing my books. So then he said, all right, Krishna, extended Prabhupada's stay at that time by another 10 years, about 9 years. And at that time, Srila Prabhupada started writing 2 books. He was writing Nectar Devotion and Krishna Book. So one of them he was doing in the morning, the other one he was doing in the evening. And Prabhupada wrote that in the Krishna Book. He wrote in the introduction to the Krishna Book that I don't know if I'm going to actually get there. If I'm going to be able to get that far, Prabhupada's mission is 10th, it is Srimad Bhagavatam. And Prabhupada had planned 60 volumes. And at the pace that Srila Prabhupada was going, so Prabhupada had come to the 10th canto, we had about, what was it, 27, 28, 29 volumes. And Prabhupada just entered would have come to the first 10th canto, and that was like 6 months before Prabhupada was leaving this world. So Srila Prabhupada wrote this in 1970, that, I mean, not so about it. Therefore, he summarized all of the 10th canto. Why? Because Srimad Bhagavatam is ultimately meant to qualify us to appreciate Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that happens pretty well all throughout the first 9 cantos. But then you've got to be able to swallow this thing that God tends cows, he steals, he lies, he passes urine in other people's living rooms, he pinches children's bodies, and he acts like an ordinary person. So that God is extraordinary, that's fine. And that's there in every religion, and it's there in our Judeo-Christian background, or even in Hindu culture. Then everyone has this concept of Lord Narayan, and that's why everyone thinks that Krishna is just an incarnation of Lord Narayan. But that the original form of God is a cowherd boy, and not only the cowherd boy, but when you read Brihad Bhagavatam Rita, which is a real must, Sanatana Goswami says that the spiritual world looked just like Vrindavan did 500 years ago. Not today, but 500 years ago. In other words, it looked very, very ordinary. And Krishna is very ordinary. He has temper tantrums. He loses his temper. And so many other human-like things that he does. And on top of which is that he likes to dance with other people's wives. So to be able to actually digest that, you really need to have strong faith, conviction, and you need to have a real philosophical understanding. You have to really understand the philosophy. And that's why in the very beginning, although there are some Krishna's birth is there in the 10th canto, and then we start off with, of course, Krishna escaping out of the prison. Putana, Trinavarta, and Shakapasura, and Mother Yashoda seeing inside Krishna's mouth. And the seeing inside Krishna's mouth sort of indicates that, yes, this little boy is actually the source of creation. But then Shukadeva goes, Pariksit Maharaj asks this question, that how, even though she sees that he's the source of creation, she just treats him just like Lavina treats sheep, Sharon. And she thinks of him in the same way. This is my son. He's born from my womb. God? That's a detail. He may be God, he may not be God. She's not God. Krishna's God, but even though he's God and he's the source of Krishna, it doesn't matter. So Pariksit Maharaj said, what kind of bhakti is this? And how did she attain this position of acquiring this type of devotional service where love dominates over any other type of understanding of Krishna's supremacy? And the answer is not straightforward. You have to read the commentaries in order to actually really understand that they didn't do anything to be Krishna's parents. They are eternally Krishna's parents. And the story of Drona and Dara is really a side issue. And from there, which is the 8th chapter, up until Krishna's departure from Vrindavan, this type of very unique devotional service, which is called Braja Bhakti, Ragatmika Bhakti. This is being described in different ways as it's possessed by Krishna's parents, by the counterboys, by the gopis, and this is the ultimate fruit of the bhakti which is being described in the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the ultimate perfection of life, which, as Srila Prabhupada pointed out, Prabhupada gave the introduction to Bhagavatam. What was it? Lord Chaitanya's biography, a summary of Lord Chaitanya's life, which is very important because this is what Lord Chaitanya came to actually clarify and emphasize, that we're not here to become Narayana Bhaktas, Lord Nishinadev, Lord Varaha, all of these incarnations. Yes, certainly they're there and they have their devotees, but through the medium of worshipping Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and chanting Hare Krishna, then one can actually attain a devotion like that of the residents of Vrindavan. And the purpose of this extended narration, which goes through 10th canto, would have been by Srila Prabhupada's count 30 volumes. So 11th, 12th canto are just 4 volumes. 30 volumes, 15 volumes, just the Vajra Bhakti, which would have been 25% of all of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the essence. And if you hear about this, then you awaken a desire to have a type of devotional service like that. In Nectar Devotion, Srila Prabhupada says, by worshipping Radha Krishna, one awakens a desire like that of the gopis of Vrindavan to serve Krishna. In that very type of, it's called spontaneous service. It's not something that is impelled by Krishna's divinity. It's something that's inspired by Krishna's sweetness. But even though sometimes Krishna may be very impudent and maybe very so many other things, but by his beauty and by his talks and by his movements and by his character, he's so lovable that he inspires people to love him, not for what he is, that he's God, but for who he is, that he's a person. And that's why this is Supreme Personality of Godhead. So when Prabhupada published Krishna book, devotees proposed different titles, and Nishu said, Krishna. Nishu said, no. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada wanted it very clear that this boy is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the Krishna Sthubhavan Swayam, which is the inaugural in terms of philosophical statement verse of Paribhasa Sutra, it's called Srimad Bhagavatam. And that's what Bhagavatam's about. Bhagavatam is somehow or another Jena Kevakarina, or as Rupa Goswami says, Krishna Bhaktira Sambhavi Tamati Kriya Api Kutopi Labhyate Tattalodhya Mulya Mekalam Chandma Koti Sukriti Na Labhyate. If you can get this bhakti, pay any price for it, do anything for it, but you got to get it. But the only way you can get it is by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam from Vaishnavas who have it. That's really the essence of the Bhagavatam. Nityam Bhagavata Sevaya Bhagavata Tamashloke Bhaktir Bhavati Naishtike. That if you hear Bhagavatam from the person Bhagavatam, then you get this Bhagavat Bhakti. Bhagavat Bhakti Hinasya Jati Shatra Shastra Japa Stapa. And there's nothing to compare to it. You have to read Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Who's read Brihad Bhagavatamrita? letter, Bihat Bhagavatam Gita, summarizes that. It really says very explicitly what's sometimes not so explicit in the Bhagavatam. So let's chant Hare Krishna a little. I can't say how long it'll last, but we can try. And here's Radhe Shyam. Thank you all for coming to see Radhe Shyam Sundar. My personal experience is that if you chant Hare Krishna in front of, they're very forthcoming. Some deities are very not so easily approached, but they very easily give devotion to themselves and give that bhakti that's described in Srimad Bhagavatam. You just have to get close to them, and it may be by physical proximity, or better than physical proximity is service proximity, but it definitely works. You going? Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. And then we'll continue a little tomorrow. Maybe go through a little 11th and 12th cantos.